Ooh, spooky.
What's weird is if someone listens to this like 8 months from now, they're going to be like, what the fuck is wrong with them?
Halloween, Halloween, Halloween.
It is time for the ghouls and goblins to come out and play.
Crickets.
Wow, fuck you.
Sorry, I should have followed that with a
No, it's not funny anymore. I'm not happy.
Well, it's not about you. It's about Halloween.
Let's get on to the murder.
Oh, my God. Do you know we are at lucky episode number
13. My favorite number.
My favorite number.
Why is it my favorite number?
Because it's my favorite number.
Oh, fine. I'll give you that one.
Copycat.
I was born on the 13th.
I know you are. I know.
I was born.
I know. Well,
the full moon, the blood moon.
Oh, my God. So, yes, welcome to Coast Crime. This is lucky number 13, our episode 13, and it is a Halloween episode.
Thirteen in Italian.
Why?
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
What is 13 in Italian? You should know.
I can't remember.
You studied it.
For a trip 2 years ago. If you don't use it, you lose it. It's like me with my French. It comes back here.
What's
and there.
Three in? Oh, wait. What's 13 in French?
I brain fart.
What's three in French?
Trois.
So, trois-ting?
No.
Trois-ting? No.
That does not sound like the word I think you think it sounds like.
That sounds bad. Sorry. Well, like, okay, anyway. Japanese. Ichi, ni, san. San is three. Sansei, I think, right is now? 13.
I'm drawing a blank.
You didn't catch up on your Japanese last summer? Come on. Everyone does that.
I'm like, God damn it. Okay.
Ichi, ni, san, hai. That's what she screams in 40 Old Virgin when she goes to wax him.
Oh.
Ichi, ni, san, hai. It's 1, 2, 3. Yes.
Oh,
and
my
she yanks it.
God.
Well, the more you can know.
On that lovely note, before we get into the episode, Hunter and I came up with we didn't come up with it. Let's give credit where credit's due. We have a fun contest that we're doing with everybody.
Yes.
Yes. So for all of you listening, we really would love to boost our Apple Podcast ratings. For some reason, Apple is the one that basically dictates where you go in this world, in the podcast world.
They're like the cool kid in the parking lot that points out your car and goes, they're all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
So full disclosure, I got the idea from listening to And That's Why We Drink. So credit. But from now until December 1st, if you go and you rate and review on Apple Podcast and take a screenshot of it and send it to us, either DM it or email it, you will be entered into a drawing to win a fun prize. So you have until December 1st. Please go out there and do it. It would really mean a lot to us. And yeah, you could win something cool.
Do it. You won't. I dare you. Double.
You won't.
Doggy dare you.
Yeah, so please, you have until December 1st.
Yes, pretty please.
Rate, review on Apple, send a screenshot of it, enter it into a drawing. Now.
You will get homemade goodies, knickknacks, and who's its and what's its galore.
Galore.
So. Thingamabobs? I got plenty. 20.
Never mind.
What is she? Whatever.
Thingamabobs, I've got plenty. Yeah.
She's not in the murder show.
She's moving on. They did almost want to fry her like a fish.
Let's not say it, though, because Disney will sue us if we say it.
Yeah. Parody law, you can do parody things, I think, but no actual... We don't fuck with Disney.
Can I guess the state?
You can. Go ahead. Go for it.
Last time we did West Virginia, right?
We did Virginia.
Oh, yeah, because I sang the wrong song. We've done Delaware?
What now?
What?
Do you want to know?
Well, yeah. I thought it was like a yes or no question.
My plan originally this week was to keep it East Coast, but I'm throwing a curveball.
What?
For trick or treat. This is a trick. I took it way left field and went completely different. So, you know, my favorite holiday is Halloween.
Yes.
So I thought, A, why not cover a murder that happens on Halloween? Because it combines two of my obsessions. Murder.
And me.
Duh. Okay.
Wait.
Three obsessions.
Okay.
Murder and you and Halloween.
Okay.
And then I thought, let's bring it home to Los Angeles.
Ooh.
Let's go just off script.
Los Angeles.
So for
the city of murder. Wait. Yep.
Well, not exactly wrong. But yes, we are going to throw a curveball. And instead of doing a crime on the East Coast, We are doing a crime in L.A.
Shublamo.
This is the murder of Peter Fabiano, also dubbed the Trick or Treat Murder.
What? Peter Fabiano. He sounds Italian. Which is, sounds like I thought it'd be something like New York or Chicago.
Well.
Okay, I'm stereotyping. I'm sorry.
Well, A, yes, but B, wait.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay, so my sources for today, there's a Medium.com article by Lisa Marie Fuqua. I'm sorry if I butchered that. A PleadTheBelly.com article by Shiloh. An LA Times article called Trick or Treat Murder, but it does not have... What is your face? It doesn't have an author.
I'm waiting for you to say them. Say them.
They're not it. I didn't use the peds.
What?
No peds. No peds.
If you could only see my face right now, it was red, I mean, holding with my excitement to go peds.
Deflated. Just do once for the heck of it.
I just did it on accident. It doesn't count. Go on.
And then there's some fun Halloween facts brought to you by bestlife.com, an article by Desiree O. Because you got to throw in some Halloween facts and give credit. But they're due. So
give credit where credit's due.
Okay, so our murder takes place in 1957, and according to readers,
can you say his name again? Sorry,
Peter Fabiano.
Oh, I thought it was like Fabiano Italiano. Okay, Peter Fabiano. Got it.
Yes.
Great.
So our murder takes place in 1957, and according to Reader's Digest, the most popular Halloween costume was. Do you want to take a guess?
In 1957,
it was something I didn't expect, but you might.
That was after that.
It's a monster, if that helps.
Frankenstein?
That is right.
No way.
Frankenstein was apparently, now I saw different sources, but Frankenstein was apparently in 57.
Wasn't there a show on TV?
Yes,
Monsters.
I don't think it was the Monsters, but in 1957, there was a show or a movie about him, and it sparked popularity, even though Mary Shelley's Frankenstein had been around for forever. Older,
yeah. Okay.
But that year, apparently, it just had a giant... But it's funny, as we also all know, Frankenstein was a doctor, not the monster, but now we lovingly call the monster Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
But I digress. Would you like to take a guess as to any other old school costumes that might have been popular in the 50s?
A ghost?
Yeah.
Great. 50s.
Yeehaw.
Cowboy.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think of some women costumes. I don't know, like a doctor, would that be fun? So or like the
I hate the word because it's definitely not PC, but like a hobo was really popular back then.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Also, Davy Crockett was really popular, witches and princesses. But
well, because the economy was doing well in the 50s,
yeah, I believe. But this is like the first year. Look at how terrifying. I'll post some of these pictures.
Holy shit. This is what nightmares are made of.
They are what nightmares are made of. Some of the pictures they showed, because, you know, after the war for a while, there was no trick-or-treating or anything. So then they got back into it. And some of them were like, it reminded me of The Strangers, where they would put like a bag over their head and cut out the eyes and be like, we're a bear. And it's like, you're not a bear, you're a nightmare.
Speaking of Disney suing the fuck out of us, you see this first outfit? He's wearing a Mickey Mouse sweater with a skeleton cap.
Hey, you know what? That's 50 for you.
Disney, you got them all the way back then. Good for you.
So while you continue to look at those creepy costumes throughout the decades, I will crack into this one and we'll get going. So,
sure.
Peter Fabiano was a former Marine. I don't know what's happening over there. Was a former Marine that served in World War II and was working as a truck driver in the 40s when he met his future wife, Betty. And Betty was a pretty divorcee with two kids. And of course, they fell in love and they got married. And I also found out that trick-or-treating was like banned during World War II. Did you know that?
No.
Do you know why?
Because it could have been a form of like guerrilla warfare.
No.
Like kids come up and it's actually like, it's a bag of bombs and they run away. I don't know.
God, I wish that were the case. No.
I don't, because we're about to give away candy tomorrow.
Okay, just kidding. JK, I lied.
Terrify me.
Because sugar was actually being rationed during the war. So there wasn't any extra candy available. So they completely like suspended trick-or-treating until peace times returned.
Okay.
Kind of a fun fact that I had no idea about. So the Fabianos were living in Kingston, New York. Because you said New York.
Look at that.
And during that time, Peter continued to drive trucks. And in 1956, he relocated the entire family to Los Angeles. And that was like their dream. They wanted to move there and open hair salons. That was their jam. And once in LA, they made that happen. They opened not one, but two beauty shops.
Cool.
I don't know how hard that was back then, but I know now that would be a task. So I just think that's kind of cool.
I've got friends that open restaurants and they're like, you know, I plan on opening another one soon. I'm like, that's impressive. Like,
yeah.
To even keep one, they already said 95% of businesses close within the first year. So to have two,
yeah,
good for them.
Yeah. So from the sounds of it also, Peter seemed to like really quickly become a known hairstylist. Like it didn't take very long. But despite the fact that he was following his dreams, he and Betty kind of right out the gate of being in LA started to have issues. And that same year, Peter hired a woman named Joan Rebel. I think it's Rebel. Rebel? R-A-B-E-L?
Sure.
Sure. To work in one of his salons. And Joan was a 40-year-old freelance photographer with a background in writing. And she was hoping that the part-time income would kind of just help supplement her creative pursuits. And her pursuits would soon, however, be focused on something else other than photography.
That fantastic Italian salon owner.
Or
not. But I'm already worried because, never mind. Let's go on before I spoil stuff. I'm already worried.
When Joan was introduced to Betty Fabiano, she was instantly infatuated with her.
That's my shallow-mindedness.
Joan developed a close friendship with both Peter and Betty. And as Peter's career really took off, his marriage to Betty just shit the bed. It like just started to really crumble. There's no other way to put it, really.
Just shit
the bed. And eventually it got to the point where Betty could no longer stand living with Peter. She was like, I'm out of here. I'm moving in with Joan. Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. That's what's up. So later in reporting the story, the LA Times would describe Joan and Betty's relationship as quote unquote abnormal. Because mostly the newspapers at that time avoided the topic altogether. They would never say lesbian because remember,
it's back then.
And in 1957, to report on a homosexual relationship, they still considered being gay a mental illness in the 50s because the world is fucked. So they hardly would even talk about it. But anyway, it was apparently. But then
we've only had drawings of ancient Egyptian people making love to each other in ancient Greece. But not the 50s.
Yep. So, but of course, the neighbors and the papers could call their relationship whatever they wanted. But these ladies were all about loving each other. They did not even try to hide it. And it was the 50s. I'm like, good for you. Because you know people were crazy back then. And I would have feared for my safety if I were one of them. But they were just living their life, which I thought just sounded really rad. So
maybe they should have feared for their safety.
And I'm also not cheering on. Let me just side note cheating. I'm not cheering because she was having an affair.
Okay. So they were having an affair at first and then they split.
Peter and Betty were separated at the time of her relationship with Joan. So it's kind of extramarital, but it's kind of not. But anyway, just throwing that out
there. The paperwork was en route, kind of in processing.
Well, here's the thing.
Separated?
They were separated.
That I'd see okay.
Yeah. But after a while, Betty decided she wanted to work on her marriage and she left Joan to go back to Peter and her old school life.
Oh, shit.
And Peter actually had found out about the relationship and those close to him said that he just felt extremely threatened by it, which I get, male or female, I'm sure. So Peter made it very clear to Betty. He kind of put his foot down and drew a line in the sand. He's like, you want this marriage to work? That's fine. But you have no contact with Joan ever again. Like, you are done. And, of course, she said, okay, fine. I want to work on my marriage. I don't need this person in my life. And soon after Betty went back to Peter, Joan realized that her girlfriend was serious about fixing her marriage. And she rapidly became fixated on removing Peter completely from the equation. And knowing she lost Betty is when Joan actually reached out to a woman named Goldine Pizer. I think it's Pizer, but I don't know. Oh, there's no
Is it P-Z-I?
P-I-Z-E-R? Maybe it's Pizer. P-Z? I don't know.
Pfizer is like P-F-I-Z.
Right? Okay, so Pizer.
Yeah.
I'm a name butcher, y'all. We'll go with that. So Goldine was born in Illinois to German immigrants, and she moved to Los Angeles by 1940 and was working as a secretary. And she had been married briefly in 1944, but the marriage didn't last and she was quickly divorced. And after her marriage ended, Goldine was known to just date women and was, you know, was very taboo at the time, but she was just openly gay and badass.
Fuck the 50s.
Kick the 50s right in their face. So Goldine fell fast and hard for Joan, though, when she met her. However, Joan was clearly not over Betty and would constantly speak about her and how Peter was like terrible to Betty and was abusive to the children. And Joan started to put the idea in Goldine's head that Peter was like a horrible person.
A monster,
a monster, and he needed to die. She was like, look, he beats the kids. He beats Betty. All of these things. He's into drugs. And Goldine was very impressionable. And she's like, my God, this man sounds like the devil.
And what drugs did they have back in the 50s?
Well, it wasn't love.
Yeah.
And brainwashing.
Yeah.
I mean, yes. Yeah, that's okay, like literally. Okay. Well, I mean, that's what she fell for. Oh, they were pushing drugs in the 50s. Yeah. There was a lot of gang activity out here in the 50s.
Okay.
Yeah, there's things, because you think about like Al Capone and all that, or whether it's alcohol and things along those lines. But, you know, there were some illicit activities happening for
like,
sure.
Like, I thought the tobacco wacky came in fact in like the late 60s.
You know, I should do more Googling, but apparently from what I read, they did say that gangs had like a big heyday.
We can't, because you did not cite the Googs on this episode, babe.
Jesus.
Wait, the peds. Whatever. Peds. Sorry. Sorry. Moving on. My bad.
Okay. So over a 3-month period, Joan told Goldine stories of Peter's involvement in narcotics and ultimately convinced her that Peter was a product of evil. And Goldine would later say, quote, she painted him as a vile, evil man who wanted to destroy all people around him. Although I had never seen him, I built up an intense hatred for him. So, yeah.
Mm.
But little did Goldine know, everything that Joan was telling her was completely fabricated. Peter was a great guy. He did none of that stuff. And so Joan hatched a plan with Goldine to get Peter Fabiano out of the picture for good. Joan was the brains of the operation. Obviously, it sounds like it. And Goldine was sadly a pawn in her game. And now they just needed to. This is so weird. Now they decided, well, how are we going to kill him? We need to figure it out. And they actually like a conversation and went through like, well, we can't use a knife. We shouldn't use poison, and like actually weeded out ideas.
Well, at least, they put some homework into
it. Right? I mean, if you're going to do it, commit. I don't even know. So, God, I hate that. So Joan took Goldine to a gun shop and actually gave her the money to buy a revolver and bullets.
They went with a gun out of all that homework?
I know. And they're, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. I don't know why. Maybe it's just like less at. Well, we figure, not that it's impossible for a woman to stab a man. You absolutely can. But that's the odds of being overpowered. If I try to come at you with a knife, you could. If we were like this, if you're not sleeping, you're taking my ass out.
If you shoot him in the back of the head in a dark alley,
yeah,
there's a
good
chance you can get away with it.
You have to get too up close and personal. And what are they going to do? Sneak into the house and poison his food? It's not like she was the wife where she could just be like, here's your pancakes.
So they were doing homework more on what's a sure thing that's going to kill him, not what's going to possibly trace back to us.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Okay. Because they weren't like, there was no CSI back then. So they were just like, nah, we'll figure it out.
They thought this out, but. At that point, as soon as they started making the wheels in motion, the plan went from being fantasy to being reality. Okay, so here we are.
Yeah, when you buy a gun, it's pretty real.
You ready for this shit?
Ready for this shit.
It is now Halloween night, 1957. Switch it up so we're not using other people's music.
Homage to it, so they can't take that part, right? It's like a tribute. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. John Carpenter, I'm sorry. So Joan borrowed a car from a friend, and she left her car in the driveway of her home so that the neighbors would corroborate the fake alibi that, you know, she was at home during the time of the murder. So she's thinking ahead. Joan picked out a costume for Goldine to wear, and the two of them staked out the Fabiano home. And this costume just kills me. So the costume consisted of blue jeans, a khaki jacket, red gloves, a domino mask, and makeup.
Domino mask?
I'm glad you said that. I had to Google what that is. A domino mask is what Robin wears in Batman and Robin, just the black eye mask. You know, where it's just his eyes.
Yeah.
So it's a domino mask.
That's her outfit.
That is her outfit.
Jeans, khaki jacket, red gloves,
domino mask, and makeup that blurred her face. So they put on like cake makeup, like clown makeup. So terrifying, first and foremost.
Yes.
But Goldine had the gun in a paper bag as if she was trick-or-treating. Smart. And also horrific. So they sat in the car and waited as trick-or-treaters finally retreated home after a night of gathering candy. And at 11:30 p.m., the bedroom lights went off in the Fabiano home. And Joan at that point looks at Goldine and she goes, all right, go do it. So Just that simple. Goldine gets out of the car and walks right up to the house. She rings the doorbell. Now, at this point, Peter and Betty had actually already gotten into bed. And when they heard the doorbell, Peter got up to answer it. And he thought it was actually like a last minute trick-or-treater. So he grabbed the last bit of his candy, which I can only assume was a Charleston chew, because apparently that was the number one candy.
No, saltwater taffy.
I mean, at that point, the number one candy at that year was Charleston chews. Chocolate nougat, not terrible.
Not bad.
I've had them. Very old timey. Just, oh.
Yeah, you see?
Yeah.
So she probably hand it out. Trick or treat. Yeah. So, get the Charleston chew, okay?
So he grabs the candy, heads down to the front door. Betty's still in bed. And
sorry. I shouldn't ask.
I mean, I think it's funny.
Okay. So, out of sight.
As he answered the door, he said, quote, "It's a little late for this, isn't it?" The sound of a bullet being fired rang out throughout the street, and Peter fell where he stood in the doorway.
One shot.
One shot, straight to the chest, point blank range.
Jeez, oh, Pete's.
And Goldine, she didn't even take the time to see if he was dead. She noped the fuck out of there so quick.
I mean, yeah, that's what you should have done.
So she ran back to the car where Joan was waiting. She got in the car and Joan leaned over. She said, and this is all in testimony, Joan leaned over, kissed her and said, thank you. And they drove off. So the two women, they leave the crime scene. They return the car to Joan's friend. And at some point they left the jacket in the back of the car. They don't really touch on it later, but it seems to be a form of evidence that they used, even though they don't bring it up again. I don't know. But they burned the rest of their clothing in case there was any trace evidence on them. So even in the 50s, they were thinking. And then now their mission is complete. Joan looked at Goldine and she said, quote, forget you ever knew me. And then they parted ways. So whoa. After all that.
This is sounding like a perfect murder.
Right?
Okay.
Okay. So at this point, here's the thing. I just want to say this. I know this is all bullshit and she committed a murder. But if I were Goldine, I would be like, what in the actual fuck? Like, she even says when they talked to her later, she committed this crime thinking, I'm helping save this woman who's being abused by her husband for this woman that I'm in love with. And we're going to ride off into the sunset together and be together. And then she's like, thanks for killing this person. Peace. I'm out. And just dropped her like a hot potato. Like, crazy. Yeah. I don't know. I just think it's like,
wait, oh, Goldine had the hots for
Goldine was in love with Joan and Joan is in love with Betty. So she thought,
typical love triangle.
So she was like, if you do this for me, you're helping out Betty because she'll no longer be abused. And she got it into her head
that if you help me out, we'll be together.
Yeah. You know, it's like this weird act of love. Like it's
too many delusions of grandeur going on here, my dear.
It's bananas. All right. So now Goldine, this is where it's kind of crazy. So she realized she still had the .38 caliber Smith & Wesson, and she had no freaking clue what to do with it. Joan never said to her what she should do. So she actually went downtown to a department store. And back in the day, you could buy lockers or rent lockers. So she rented a locker in a department store in downtown and just locked it in there and left it there. Which I guess she's not a murderer. She's a pawn in this woman's game. I mean, she is a murderer, but like her brain is just like, well, what do I do now? Like, it's not like it was thought out down the road. She thought, I killed this guy.
Yeah.
Lovey-dovey for life. And then whatever.
No, I'm going to leave a murder weapon in a locker in a department store.
But nobody's going to know. Whatever. Crazy. Okay. So Joan is smug. She thinks, I masterminded the perfect murder. This is great. Nobody's going to know it was me. Then for a minute, she was correct. So going back to when the murder actually occurred. So now we're cutting back, flashback to Betty in bed.
I felt like you didn't put all the details in. It sounded too perfect. A neighbor watched across the street.
Well, no.
A small kid on his bike, racing home for the last piece of candy.
The mailman.
The ghost that lures the streets on Halloween. Sorry. Let's go. I'm just kidding.
Oh my God.
So distracted.
Okay. Focus. Here we go. So cutting back to when the actual shot goes off. Betty is in bed. She hears a shot go off and she runs downstairs to check on her husband. And she finds Peter laying on the floor unconscious. And he had been shot once, like I said, and the bullet entered his chest just below his heart. So Peter is rushed by ambulance to a nearby hospital. But of course, he never regains consciousness. And Betty was such a mess. They actually had to sedate her for a few days following the shooting. Like she could not be consoled. And she was completely useless to the police. Like she was that beside herself. They just sedated her and put her in the hospital, which I mean,
yeah,
that makes sense. Cause
yeah,
like if shit happened to you, you might as well just take me with you. Cause I'm going off the deep end.
You can go get the person who did it. We'll call it.
Okay. Quit. I'll kill him first.
We'll call it quits.
Okay. We'll talk about it later. Yeah. Hey, I've been watching a lot of Snapped.
I know. Hence why we're here doing a podcast.
So when Betty was finally able to compose herself, she told the investigators that right before the shot went off, she heard two voices downstairs. One voice sounded like a man, but the other sounded like a man pretending to be a woman. So you could clearly tell that the second voice was hiding their voice, or trying to. And initially, the police thought that this might have been a gang shooting, because apparently the gang violence around there was actually really common in the 50s in Los Angeles, old gangster stuff. Mm-hmm. And they also knew that earlier in the 40s, Peter had actually been charged with like bookmaking and all that stuff before moving to L.A. So he had a criminal record. But ultimately, they were able to determine that since being in California, he had actually stayed completely clean. He became a reputable businessman. No weird dealings. So they quickly just dropped that theory. Now, when police questioned Betty, they asked her if she could think of anybody who would want to kill her husband. And of course, immediately she said, there's only one person, Joan.
Good old Joan.
She knew. She knew right away. Initially, she told them that she was a family friend, though, and she didn't elaborate on the relationship. I think later on, and I understand, you would hide it in the 50s. For sure. But realizing, you know, this goes deeper than we thought, they bring Joan in and they released her after her questioning. They really didn't have much that they could go on. It was she was ready. She was ready for that interview.
Yeah.
But as the weeks go by, the police actually went and ran out of suspects. Like, they're trying everything. They started to think the case is not going to get solved. And they're at a dead end until a gun was found at a downtown department store in a locker, and after a ballistics test, it, of course, matched the bullet that was fired into Peter Fabiano. They check the freaking lockers. Of course they do. People just abandon them, so they, like, open them, I guess. Like, I guarantee she said it.
But here's my thing. The cops didn't go, all right, boys, let's just go to the department stores and open the lockers.
And they didn't elaborate. No, I think the people
who run. Oh, the department store. Yeah, it's like at a gym. Yes. Like, okay, you've left this lock on it. We're going to bust it open.
Exactly.
Okay, got it.
And whoever had the wherewithal to go, there's a freaking gun in here. Instead of just being like, oh, I got a gun. They're like, maybe we should call the police.
No, they're more like, meh, a gun over here, you see?
Yeah, same round. Like Capone. Yeah, that's right. 30K caliber.
Anyone in the 50s is going to be pissed off at us.
I mean, well,
whatever.
It's 2020, so yeah, okay. We've had a little bit of time.
Shut down, you see?
Oh, my God. So after they do the ballistics test, they realize the weapon shows that it is registered, because of course they're going to freaking check, to Goldie and Pizer.
A
lab assistant at the children's hospital. So they were able to figure out, obviously, where she worked and everything, because you had to give all your information when you got a gun.
True.
At that time, at least. I don't know now. But so they were really shocked that it was somebody that was not even on their radar in connection to the Fabianos. Because remember, she never met him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neither did Betty. They have no idea who this woman is.
Like, who's this Goldine chick?
Yeah. So on November 12th, Goldine was arrested for the murder of Peter Fabiano. And while being interrogated, she, of course, confessed to everything because she didn't have it in her not to, because she was a pawn in a game. Not excusing murder. I just feel for her because you hear these stories all the time. And she stated that it was Joan's idea to commit the murder, clearly. And she said that Joan coerced her into killing him because obviously she thought he was a terrible man, yada, yada, but she had never even met him. And Goldine went on to explain how Joan gave her the money to buy the gun and how they had been planning the murder for weeks. And she even told them that Joan, she had driven them by Peter's house multiple times just so she would recognize Peter and know when it was time to shoot him that it was the correct person. Like, she would just take her by the house and be like, that's him leaving the house. That's him in his car. So she would know because she had never met him before.
Wow, this is quite the obsession.
So let's talk about that. Is some major premeditation.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all of this has been weeks in the making. So, and this is the part that I don't like, obviously, but before their trial started in December, both women had to meet with three psychiatrists, and the courts seemed to believe that their choice in sexual partners might make them unfit to fit to stand trial. Because, like I said, at that time, being gay was considered a mental illness. So they forced them to see three separate psychiatrists. Give me a fucking break. Anyway.
Society was still blind to the truth.
I hate you, 50s. Sorry to people from the 50s, but you're probably really old right now, so it's okay.
They didn't know any better. I mean they were, there was a lot of societal pressure. There's stuff that we look at now, right?
I know.
Now,
and there's stuff that we're going to look at 20 years from now that we're like, you know, what the hell? They're like,
oh my God, you didn't see it this way? And we're like, I don't know.
We're so aware of the media told us. In 2020, and we're not, but we're not. I digress. Goldine relayed the same story that she told to the police. To the psychiatrist. And she said, you know, I had no motive personally. Whatever motive I had was to please Joan. And I was always easily influenced. I've been impressionable and always trusting. So like, she's always just been very vulnerable and very naive. So the psychiatrist who had met with her wrote in his notes, quote, the only thought she had was that she had to save her friend, Joan Rebel, from an evil person. That's it. She really just was convinced it was helping Joan, it was helping Betty, whatnot. So when their trial started, they both pled not guilty. Goldine was by reason of insanity. And when Goldine took the stand in her defense, she openly cried when she described to the court what she had done on Halloween night. However, in stark contrast to Goldine, Joan was all smiles at the trial. It appeared as though she thought the whole thing was a production and that everyone was there to see her. And she thought it was like her 15 minutes of fame. So the entire time she just like was basking in it. Because you have to remember, this was like huge.
Well,
it got a lot of press.
The television was not out yet, correct? In the 50s? Or was it?
I feel like.
If it was, it was not color.
No,
it was not a lot of channels.
Well, yeah, because they had. I don't know. I know they had movies. I don't know about I guarantee they had TVs. I bet you, but it was like three channels, you know, in the 50s. I think it was an early version. Don't quote me. I know nothing about history. So initially, they had both been charged with first-degree murder, but through a plea deal, it was reduced to second-degree murder. And in 1958, each woman was sentenced to 5 years to life in prison. And Goldine was released from prison, and by 1971, she was an officer at the Miracle Mile chapter of Professional Women's Club, of the Professional Women's Club. And according to California death records, she died in L.A. County in 1998 at the age of 83. Betty, she lived out the rest of her life, happy, I mean, minus losing her husband, and she died at the age of 81. So this is what's weird. While it was noted that she was released from prison, multiple sources have found no further trace of Joan Rebel ever after that point. There's a record of her leaving prison, and then she's gone.
Wait, when did she get out of prison?
I forget what year it was.
Well, how long did she serve?
Sorry. Well, they sentenced her to 5 years to life. Goldine was released from prison and was working by 1971. So it didn't say, but I have a feeling it was less. I mean, I don't know if they served more than 5 years or I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
at some point there is record, and weirdly I couldn't find it. They just said that they do have it showing that she was released. Then nothing.
Joan got out and Joan went gone.
Changed her name, dyed her hair, said peace. Wow. And hopefully didn't go out and murder anybody else. Well, she didn't murder, but it was her fault.
She can't be alive now, can she?
If she was, I think she was like in her 30s and in the 50s. So I don't think so.
If some 98-year-old woman shows up to our door tomorrow as I'm giving out treats to trick-or-treaters.
Well, then don't.
In khakis and a denim. I'm running and I'm screaming your name. Alex made me do it. Alex made me do it. And you can deal with the paper bag and the .38 caliber.
God.
I'm kidding. I wouldn't do that. I'd throw one of our pillows in front of it. I was about to say friends. And I'm like, never mind.
Yeah, no. Pillows.
Pillows.
I would say throw the bowl of candy, but if you throw my Reese's at somebody, I will fucking go off. You'll have to be more worried about me than you would about a woman with a gun if you throw my Reese's at somebody. I'll be like, listen, you know what? Keep the bowl. Give me the candy. But that is the murder on Halloween of Peter Fabiano, a.k.a. the trick-or-treat murder.
The fuck kind of cheesy noises are
these? I mean, look, I don't know, but hopefully that story doesn't give any would-be candy hander-outers any salinophobia. And that
What is that? Salmonophobia?
Like salmonophobia is the actual fear of Halloween. And I will be the doctor and read you this psychologist definition. So it's a persistent, abnormal, and unwarranted fear of Halloween, despite the conscious understanding by the phobic individual and reassurance by others that there is no danger. So that it's just a full-blown Halloween phobia, which actually I think a lot of people probably have.
Yeah.
I mean, you look, there are people growing up with the lights off and like the windows drawn. And you're like, are you in there just because you are cheap and don't want to give out candy, or are you scared? And some weird shit happens on Halloween. So it would be if they're scared.
Weird
I get
shit
it.
Happens the night before Halloween. Why? Because it's called.
Night.
Yes.
Let's go out there and make some mitten. Now I'm too old for that.
Man, I used to. Never mind. I can't admit to any things I did as a. Adolescent.
Yeah, there's probably a statute of limitations.
There's a record. I didn't do such a thing to certain dozen houses. No.
None of them had it coming.
Never.
The guy at the end of the
street. I was bored. I was testing out that baseball arm of mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I, for one, am looking forward to handing out candy, social distance style, tomorrow. But one more fun fact, because that was a weird murder. And
yeah, let's fucking do it.
So, fun fact about Halloween candy. Americans buy enough Halloween candy each year to fill 6 Titanics.
Shit.
Maybe not this year, but on an average year.
Don't worry. You guys just stopped by our house. We bought enough to fill at least one Titanic for ourselves.
Oh, come on. It's enough to fill like a Cadillac. It's fine.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Please.
Oh, boy.
But, yes, that's our Halloween episode. If you're going to go out, I know you're not supposed to. Be safe. Wear a mask. Wash your hands. All that jazz.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
Use some sanitizer. Wash your hands.
Space out. All that jazz. But hopefully you enjoyed our creepy Halloween episode and our fun voices, because obviously this is what we do for a living. Voiceovers, duh.
All day, every day.
Like, hello.
Boom, shakalaka.
But please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
Take a screenshot out of that, because that would be amazeballs.
We'd love that. Yes. Also, if you're going out tomorrow, wear a costume. Don't be that like jackass that puts on a hat and says like, I'm a baseball player off duty. No, don't fucking do that.
That's true. Absolutely.
I went out to the 99-cent store and bought a cat earpiece and a tail and put on some makeup, and it cost me $3 and 5 minutes of my life.
You have to at least wear like a little bit to hand out candy. So, yes.
And I was a fantastic little feline.
You were an adorable cat. Yes, you were. All right. Well, thank you. Screenshot that, rate and review. Send it to us, Coast to Coast Crime on Instagram or coasttocoastcrime@gmail.com. And then I'm going to make good old spreadsheet and we'll draw a name out of the hat on December 1st. And we will let you guys know who wins. But have a very safe and happy Halloween. And we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye.